Well, I just wanted to thank you guys for inviting us out here today. I'm from an organization called Third World Majority, and a lot of the work that we do is about reframing who owns the media and how we define the media in the work that we do, specific in terms to our cultures. And the way that I wanted to talk about it was I wanted to really frame it by both an experience both Oriana and I had, Oriana, who's also from Third World Majority, and also a quote from Coco Fusco. And this last 2 months has been a really hectic period for us. We've had like a national training, and we are moving our offices, and then I personally am moving from my own home. And in between all of that madness, we've been working with this one group, which is the Tibetan Students Association in Berkeley, to really tell the story of Tibetans in America and the struggle that they have in terms of maintaining their culture in the face of being immigrants and being refugees in the United States, and being also very engaged in a political struggle to take back their homeland. And this one person had invited us, and he's an amazing burgeoning filmmaker, and we went to go help videotape like Democracy Day that was happening in the first week of September. And we were both exhausted, clearly dehydrated, very much in a bad mood, crawling around with our video cameras. And we got there, and one of the most remarkable things happened was one of the reasons why he wanted us to videotape was all the Tibetan women and some of the Tibetan men and some of their children are doing this circle called the Tibetan Circle Dance, which is a way that they renew their culture. And there was this moment we were invited in to videotape, and then we were assisting other filmmakers there who were coming up to also videotape. And in watching this like really precious moment where adults and this one like beautiful baby girl was dancing, it was a sudden moment in the sun that kind of clicked for us. Because in a lot of ways, what we do isn't about getting technology into people's hands. It's about people reframing and re-understanding the values of their culture in a way that enables them to be more effective in their struggles for resistance and self-determination as we see fit. For me, it's not necessarily about necessarily bridging the digital divide as much as it is getting people to feel that sense of culture that can take them forward. And I think that moment was one of the incredible moments that, despite our exhaustion, we were like, that's exactly where we need to be. And I feel one of the things in terms of reframing what media democracy looks like is in terms of understanding how media fits into the role of all of our movements. There's this idea that the media movement is over there, and the struggles for self-determination and the struggles for resistance are over here. And there is a bridging that needs to happen, but there also needs to be an acknowledgement of how much native media cultural production has come. Because for a lot of us, we don't have anything. We don't have structures in our communities. That's been eroded. We don't have wealth. We don't have assets. The only thing that we have is our culture. It's just like Malcolm X said, culture is our weapon. But since they haven't taken our culture, we're still able to fight. And I think that brings me to the next quote, which was actually, we were part of this conference a year ago, where I was able to hear Coco Fusco speak. And Coco Fusco said, the reason why we need to be involved with new media technologies, like video, like multimedia, however the realm you want to define that whole digital spectrum, is what the camera is to us now, and how we use video and new media technologies is what the camera and photography was in the hands of the anthropologists and those who were part of the front line of colonialism. And in a lot of ways, in Third World Majority, that's how we define and we structure all of our technology trainings. We introduce the idea that, yes, we are learning technology and we are going to be documenting our communities. But as communities of color, both in this country and as colonial communities, we have a history of trauma with this technology. It's no accident that the same video cameras and the same video technologies that we used in our digital storytelling workshops are the same video cameras that are used to surveil our young people in our schools, within our prisons, or in military reports. As you can see, like with what's going to happen now in the Gulf, most of what we saw was that grainy surveillance video. And a lot of what the news reports are in Afghanistan were shot on a Sony PD-100A or the Sony VX-2000. And yet, it's something incredibly liberatory when we take that technology back to tell our own stories. But it cannot be without the parameters of that idea that it's in the context of our self-determination. Otherwise, I feel like we repeat the same sort of value system. Now, one of the things in terms of Third World Majority that we've had to do is Third World Majority, we're a young woman of color, political new media collective. And While we offer lots of different trainings, our core training is the digital storytelling workshop, in which in 3 days we work with people who've had no access, no experience in terms of the media democracy movement or the media advocacy movement, or in that context with any sort of like video or multimedia production. Partially because the communities that we work with see media spaces as unsafe spaces. I mean, it was actually like a big riot. We'd actually gotten some scholarship money to try and get folks from the communities that we work with to come to this conference. And I can tell you, I was personally on the phone like several hours with several people trying to get them here, and it felt like such an unsafe place. Partially because not only that history of trauma, but because of that divide of the media democracy and the media advocacy movement and struggles for self-determination. That has been a really big divide, and that's been something that we've been trying to work with. But in the context of our work, one of the things that we've had to challenge ourselves in the face of this divide is seeing that current structures in terms of media literacy, how they're not reaching our communities and the communities that we're partners with. What are ways, instead of replicating the structures that we see, what are the ways that we can actually create structures that come from within? And we didn't take that from like an afar perspective. We took it as young women of color who were, one, never seen as technology leaders or advocates in our own communities, regardless around technology or around our self-determination struggles, but also in terms of like larger media movements or technology movements. There are a huge amount of people who, the minute me or Oriana or someone else from our collective comes into a room, we have to fight for the space that we draw out. Not just in terms of our own leadership, but in terms of the communities that we come from. And so in thinking about what that battle looks like, especially in terms of really validating the leadership of young women of color, the most marginalized within our communities, to be the leaders, seen both as the leaders in terms of their communities, but also within the mainstream context, we very specifically set up a structure that would like lead itself to doing that. So one of the things that we were clear on is that all of our teachers have to be young women of color. That doesn't mean we exclusively work with women, young women of color, but when you're in mixed contexts, oftentimes, like if you have 4 young women of color leading a training, and there's no other person that they can kind of actually divert the respect to or divert the actual attention to, actually, what will happen is people will give young women of color respect. It's kind of a weird concept, but it's something that we've seen work over time. And I'm not saying that to be actually like the professional asshole that sometimes I try to be in certain contexts, but it's more because actually we were at this really, we just, at our national training, we actually had about 8 young women of color training 20 organizations and 46 young people from across the country in film and video in 3 days. And in those 3 days, 20 movies were produced by 20 amazing organizations about the status of the youth movement. And in that context, it was really interesting. That was like one of our first training spaces where we actually had 2 technical directors, both of whom happened to be male because of like what happened with our training schedule. But in that context, it was very interesting. Immediately within that, having a mixed teaching pool, a mixed gender teaching pool, people would say comments like, you guys are great teachers and you had great tech support. And I'm actually thinking that that person has more technical experience. So let me go to them, Thamori, even though that was a person that I had trained. And it's a subtle difference, but in terms of like our whole agenda, we have a very not so secret agenda of rebuilding the matriarchy. So in that context, we're very conscious about how both the teaching dynamics and the dynamics within the students are always working so that we don't replicate patterns of unhealthy media production, but also still make sure that in terms of the media advocacy and the media democracy movement and struggles for self-determination aren't movements that are far apart, but are one and the same. So I think that's one thing that we've been really good about. I think the other thing that we've been really, really conscious of, and all of us who are within TWM have been organizers and have been lots of different movements. It was actually really funny on the way here when we were walked over here. I was like, the last time I'd been in Seattle was for the WTO protest. And I was like, oh yeah, that's where the tanks were. And oh yeah, that's where we were tear gassed. And I remember that jog. Like, I didn't have that, you know. So this was like what Seattle was bringing up for me in terms of walking by. But I think one of the things that's really important was that there was a really clear actual reaction that we were part of the first youth of color delegation that came to a big Global Justice Conference, and that we were brought over by Just Act. And there was a clear reaction from many of the young people who were part of the delegation about not wanting to be in the independent media center. And one of the things was they were scared. It was like their first kind of, you know, global justice movement encountering. They saw people that weren't them. Most of the people that were on the equipment were older men, older white men, and they were just, it was just a new environment for them as a whole. And I think when we actually, like, and it's happened, like, and we were in D.C. as well, and that was another kind of, like, big kind of tension. And I think one of the things in terms of us surveying the people that we were working with, what are the ways that we can actually make a media center a safe place? And the thing that people kept coming back to us was, a media center isn't a safe place to us. So then we're like, okay, so if we want to actually do media democracy and media technology trainings with the communities that we work with, and we can't get them to come into our place, well, why don't we go to them? So one of the first investments that we did, and this is why none of us actually have any salaries, because we put our first seed money into getting equipment, is we bought a portable laptop lab with seven, that's like, actually at this point is 8G4 laptops, and a mixer, a mic, and video camera, so that actually whenever we do trainings with any of our community partners and our community agencies, we go there. And so actually the media center and the media lab isn't a distinct lab space. It's actually been barns. It's been like community agencies, like just old for, you know, nonprofit offices. It's been in community centers. It's been in churches. It's been where people have defined their own sense of community. And we bring in the media on the DL, on the down low. And that's been really effective, especially teaching with the laptops, because the laptops are very, very small in the context of what's really important and what's really grounded in terms of what's happening, which is storytelling. And I think this is what Jeff had talked about in a really important way, is that in some ways within the media democracy movement, we have two goals. We are, in some ways, aiming ourselves and our movement at really democratizing and creating a more accountable mainstream media. But at the same time, what we're doing is we're creating our own valid community media structures. And in creating those structures, I think one of the things that gets left out is how much media and our stories is about relationship building. And if we lose sight of the fact that it's about relationship building, we forget that what grounds media, what we're covering, is ourselves and our culture. Which brings us back to that whole idea that we must be grounded in the struggles for self-determination from the communities that we're a part of. And I think that our practice is an evolving practice. I don't feel like it's a perfect practice, but it's something that we're aiming to. And a lot of our work, you can kind of, we've been trying to figure out ways that we can kind of involve more people in, especially in the context of, like, what are the ways that we would build allies? Like, for example, even though we do have a teaching collective of young women of color, one of the things, particularly if you're working with, like, young people, and if you're working with young students that are of mixed gender, so you have, like, young boys and young girls, especially folks of color, in that context, because of the way most teaching environments are seen as very traumatic, what ends up happening is you have, like, the young men in the room being really needing to have the attention that they're not given either in their homes or in their communities or in their schools, wanting to take the bulk of the attention up in the room. And the young women kind of, like, marginalized to the back or really quiet as the young men are like, I need this and I need that and I need blah, 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 which is very common. Like, if you're a teacher, if you've worked in these environments, that's what you see. And one of the things we were thinking about is that if we can be really clear about still maintaining the authority of young women of color in that context, what are the roles that, like, young men or men can keep in that context to really help address and give the mentorship that really that behavior is really, like, talking about, and still make sure that everyone's needs in that class and really in that movement and in that network and in that agency is being met. And so I feel like in a lot of the discussion that I'm talking about isn't just about advocacy and large remaining, it's once again back to relationship building and be really conscious about our practice as media organizers, about what are the values that we bring in our classrooms, in the way that we teach, in the way that we create resistance media, and then further, like, distribute that media. So, yeah. And in that context, like, at the end of the panel, we were all going to lead everybody in a song. because what we wanted to really do was model the whole spectrum of resistance culture. So we were going to sing a resistance song from the Bay Area. So I'm going to actually let the next panelist like introduce herself, because I'm sure she would do a much better job, because I'm not a very good introducer. But she's a fabulous person, and I met her already.